Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Second hour of our Super Monday here on Catholic Answers Live. Super Monday means we got Trent Horn with us both hours, except on those Mondays when Trent's not here, then it's Super Monday without Trent. But we have to specify it'll still be a Super Monday. We just won't have Trent. This hour coming up is the only one that concerns you now. Why are you pro-choice is our topic. Why are you pro-choice? And pro-choice means that essentially, I mean, it's synonymous with I'm in favor of abortion. So if you're in favor of abortion, and you'd like to tell us why, what your arguments are or what your reasons are, we'd be very, very pleased to discuss that with you. Why are you pro-choice? 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. Trent is our guest, as I said, Trent Horn, and he is the author of many things, but among them is the book Persuasive Pro-Life that many, many people think is just one of the finest pro-life kind of help you guides, you know, to help you to understand how to be persuasive in presenting the pro-life position and also how to be fully persuaded yourself the pro-life position is the correct, true, and reasonable position, which it is. But he's also the author more recently of Why We're Catholic, a wonderful book from Catholic Answers Press, and The Case for Catholicism, the brand new book from Ignatius Press, both of those available at Catholic.com. Trent, thanks again for being with us for another hour.
Looking forward to it.
For Super Monday. And in the last hour, you said I could do something with technology. I was a technopath. Is that what you said? Technopath?
Well, you said that your superpower, or Chris alluded that you had the power to cause the phone lines on Catholic Answers Live to close up, that to get callers in. Now, if your power were merely to make that light go on the telephone and the line to activate, that would be technopathy. The ability to control technology remotely, albeit a very limited kind. Now, if your power, however, was to cause people to call into the show, and so your power was over the caller and not over the equipment, that would be telepathy and involve mind reading or mind control.
What is it when you do not have the ability to control technology, even by use of your hands? And your mind, never mind controlling it remotely with your mind. What do we call it when you can't even get it right when you're using your hands?
That would be someone who's technologically challenged.
Yeah, so okay.
Those individuals, for example, complain on their old personal computers, the ones that are the towers, that their drink holder doesn't come out anymore, which is actually for the thing for the CD-ROMs.
That one I never heard, Trent.
Oh, there's people who have called tech support saying my drink holder doesn't come out anymore.
Yeah, you can probably guess why that drink holder doesn't come out anymore. Guess what? I am a technopath. Every single line is full. 888-318-7884 is the number. Why are you pro-choice is our question. We go now to John in Des Moines, Iowa, listening on 1150 AM. John, why are you pro-choice?
First, I want to thank you guys for having this program.
Thank you. Welcome.
I'm personally pro-life, but I became politically pro-choice for three simple reasons. One, murder is the killing of a person. Mm-hmm. Two, nobody has proven that the first trimester fetus is a person. And three, the murder suspect is innocent until proven guilty.
Okay, well, John, I'm trying to understand your argument because the two premises, well, the three premises you gave, the only conclusion that would follow from that is that right now, while abortion is legal, the courts cannot find someone guilty of having had an abortion or killing an unborn child through abortion. And so a person cannot be legally punished right now because the laws do not recognize that abortion is a crime against the unborn. But it wouldn't follow from that that someone who is pro-life, who believes that abortion is wrong, couldn't try to change the laws. So if the law changed and said that abortion was wrong and a fetus is a person, then the argument would proceed very, very smoothly. So I would need to hear a reason as to why. I guess here's my thing. If you're personally pro-life, well, then why not be politically pro-life too, and not try to say, oh, you're guilty of murder because the laws haven't changed yet, but just try to change the laws to protect the unborn. So I guess my question back to you would be, why are you personally pro-life? What does that mean?
Pro-choice, I believe.
He said he was personally pro-life.
Oh, I see. I got
you. Politically pro-choice. What does it mean that you're personally pro-life?
I'm personally pro-life because I cannot justify the killing of a human individual, a first trimester fetus that I know could be a person. I would have to prove that it is not a person in order to be personally pro-choice.
Oh, you mean to prove that it's not a person? But it seems to me that if you're politically pro-choice, if you say abortion should be legal, then don't you have a burden to show the fetus is not a person, because that's a political public view that affects the fetus?
Politically, I believe that I would have to be able to prove that the first trimester fetus is a person in order to make it illegal.
But wouldn't it follow then also to make it legal, for abortion to be legal, you would have had to have proved the fetus is not a person?
I don't think so, because we don't have a law against killing somebody who's or something that's possibly a person. We only have a law against killing somebody who is actually a person.
Right, but I would say that if people are debating this, if we're debating whether abortion is right or wrong, it should be legal or illegal, it seems to me you don't have a reason to say, oh, well, the fetus is definitely not a person. It's just, well, maybe it's a person, maybe it's not. But it seems to me that if we are not sure something is a person, we can still make it a crime to kill that thing. For example, if I were to go hunting with Sai, you know, we go up into the woods and we go hunting, and Sai wanders away from me, and I look and I think I see a deer in the brush, but I also see a fleck of orange. And so it could be a deer, or it could be my hunting partner, Sai. It would seem to me that if I took that shot, I would be negligent, because I didn't know if it was a person or not. I should defer to life in that case where I'm not sure. Shouldn't we apply that same standard to the unborn?
I could see that argument, actually. You would kind of approach it from the angle of like reckless endangerment or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. So that's one way I think that we could look at it. So just because there is a possibility the unborn's not a person, we should still respect them. Now, I would say, though, just because there is disagreement, just because people disagree about whether the unborn is a person, it doesn't follow from that we can't know the answer to that question. People disagreed about the issue of slavery. They disagree about child labor. They disagreed about racial segregation. All that proved is that many people could be wrong about which human beings had rights and which didn't. So I say, rather, what we should do is look at the arguments. What are the arguments for and against the unborn child being a person? And my position is the arguments for the unborn being a person are far stronger than the arguments for them not being a person, because the differences between born and unborn people, those same differences exist among born people. I mean, the unborn are smaller, more dependent. They're not as developed as we are, but there are born human beings like babies who are smaller, more dependent, and less developed. But that doesn't mean they don't have the same basic human rights you and I do. So I would say that just because that, number one, even though that there is disagreement about the unborn, that disagreement should count in favor of protecting them, not against it, because to say they can be killed when we're not sure is, as you put it, reckless endangerment. And number two, if we look at the arguments on one side or the other, I believe the pro-life arguments are far superior to the argument saying the unborn is not a person. So I think that's something you should consider. And definitely give us a call back. And I'd love to help move you from being personally pro-life to being publicly pro-life as well.
John, thank you very much for the call. I will repeat, I am disturbed at how often these moral illustrations that the apologists use end up with me either getting killed or my life being threatened in some way. They are extremely casual with my life whenever the example calls for a human being to be put at peril. But we do thank you for your call, John. That has nothing to do with
you. It's because people have an emotional attachment to you.
Oh.
And so it makes the argument that much more powerful. You see, in philosophy, the standard characters that show up are Smith and Jones. If you read any philosophy book, is, well, that is the case. But now imagine that Smith and Jones are, and you just instantly go to sleep. But if it's Trent and Cy, people are willing to follow the story a little bit.
But why is it Trent shooting Cy? Like, why is there any possibility that someday it could go the other way? Like, I could survive one of these moral illustrations. That's all I'm asking.
All right. Then we got 45 minutes or so left in the show.
Yeah.
If we have another one, I promise not to put you in mortal danger.
Thank you.
I'll just make you the killer.
I'm not sure how I feel about that. We
got
to take a break. I know.
You either die a good host or live long enough to become the villain. Okay.
All right. Like I said, I got to think about it. Why are you pro-choice is our topic. 888-31-TRUTH is our number. If you are a pro-choice person, meaning if you would say that abortion should be legal, whether it's maybe in the first trimester or all three trimesters or however you want to phrase it, if you believe that there are situations in which abortion is morally acceptable and should be legal, give us a call. We'd love to discuss that with you. 888-318-7884. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live right after this.
Don't you just love listening to Trent Horn? Did you know you can book Trent or any of our other great speakers to speak at your parish or special event? Contact one of our seminar coordinators through the Speakers Bureau section on Catholic.com today to find out more information.
Christmas is coming, and with Advent just around the bend, we want to make sure you know about our annual Christmas sale. With hundreds of great faith-building resources, all on sale at 20% off when you enter promo code WINTER at checkout. With great new resources on Scripture, church history, the saints, Bible prophecy, and so much more, there's simply no better time to stock up on resources to build up your faith and the faith of those around you. Phone 888-291-8000 or go to the shop at Catholic.com right now to take advantage of what is truly the best Catholic sale on the Internet, going on now through the end of the year. And remember, enter promo code WINTER at checkout to save 20% on hundreds of great resources throughout the store.
Pope Francis said, "All of us are called to mature in our work as evangelizers. We want to have better training, a deepening love, and a clearer witness to the gospel. St. Paul Street Evangelization's online school of evangelization will equip you with the tools you need to be an effective evangelist. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you're unable to give, we'll set you up for free. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Lila Rose says, "Trent Horn really knows how to get people thinking and talking about abortion. Persuasive Pro-Life is an invaluable handbook for anyone who wants to become more skilled at defending the humanity of the preborn. Order your copy of Persuasive Pro-Life today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the online shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Thanks so much for being with us on this Super Monday with Trent Horn guesting both hours. Our question of the hour, why are you pro-choice? If you are a person who favors choice in matters related to abortion, we would love to hear your reasoning, and we would love to discuss it with you. 888-318-7884, the number. We go now to Michael in Monterey, California, listening on Relevant Radio. Michael, why are you pro-choice?
Well, I'm pro-choice because of the big picture. But first of all, a teenage girl violently raped and made pregnant from that rape, how can the Catholic, and I'm a former Catholic, who was abused by a priest when I was a young boy, how can a raped teenage girl be denied the right to terminate the pregnancy resulting from that rape? And I'll tell you my reasons. My reason is, as Stephen Hawking, first of all, that the Catholic Church has some validity and reality, which it does not. As Stephen Hawking has observed, God and religion are both fairy tale fantasies and make-believe nonsense for adults, no more provable real than is the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus. The scientific method and respect for evolution is where we can explain reality. No fully educated and honest modern thinking person believes in any of the traditional religions and the theology dogmas on which the Catholic position denying
people
so much has been.
All right, Michael, I can see that you definitely have a lot of antipathy towards the Catholic Church. I'm happy to engage you on the subject of abortion. I'll start by saying that I'm sorry that you were violated by someone who should have upheld, of all the people who should uphold Catholic teaching, a priest should. And I'm sorry for what a priest did to you. And I hope that justice was done toward that, you know, that person should be legally punished and sanctioned. And if they weren't, you don't have justice in this life, that's why I'm grateful that God exists. There will be justice for the wrong that happened to you in the next life. And so I am sorry for what happened to you. But I really do hope that that injustice won't move, you know, won't be the fuel to move you away from God. Because actually, you know, if you think about it, if you rely just on science like Stephen Hawking does, you can't scientifically prove things like rape or abuse are wrong. Those are value judgments. A scientific view of the world is kind of impoverished. But that's a subject for another time. Let's talk about the issue of abortion. And look, I can defend, and I'm happy to defend, and I do defend the pro-life worldview from completely secular premises. There are many people who are not religious who are pro-life. And so let's talk about abortion and let's talk about the secular, non-religious reasons to be pro-life. Now, in the question of abortion in the case of rape, I addressed that with a previous caller. And I agree that that is an awful situation for someone who's a victim of violence, so something like rape. But I would say that violence does not give us an excuse or a justification to commit more violence against an unborn child. Now, here's my question for you so we can continue the conversation moving forward. Do you think abortion should be legal only in the case of rape? Or do you think abortion should be legal for any woman who wants one?
In an overpopulated world, in part made overpopulated and impoverished because of the Catholic Church denying women in Latin America and Africa pregnancy prevention and the use of condoms even. Catholic prelates have done that.
Okay, Michael, so it sounds like you think abortion should be legal for any reason because the world's overpopulated. Is that your position?
Unchecked. A woman's right to have an abortion, because I'm an informed thinking person and fully rational, is only contingent on whether or not she's pregnant.
Okay, so the issue of rape, that isn't the main concern for you. You think a woman should be allowed to have an abortion just because she wants one. So my question for you is, if a woman wants to kill her unborn child, you think that should be legal? Should it be legal for her to kill her born child because she wants to? In both cases, your position is grounded in her desire to end the child's life. So should infanticide or killing toddlers be legal too?
Provide for the child. The child may have resulted from a rape, as I say, or violent act, or an abusive husband.
Michael.
And the church's position is made on fantasy.
Michael, here's what I need to tell you. You are on broadcast right now, and I can see that you're pretty angry towards the church. You're very angry, and much of that may have stemmed from the violence you suffered as a boy. So, and I agree with you that that's horrible, but here's my advice for you. If you just dwell on anger, if you dwell on hatred of the Catholic Church, for example, anger or hatred of anything, it's just going to make you an angry person, and it's not going to make you happy. God really does love you, Michael, and he wants you to be happy. And he grieves over injustices you've endured. But now you have the power to escape evils that have been inflicted against you. And just because we may have suffered from evils, that doesn't give us the right to either inflict evils on others or justify evils being inflicted on others. And I really hope that you won't just hitch your wagon just to science and atheism. Because guess what? Scientists have brutally exploited people. Look up the Tuskegee syphilis experiment. Scientists let African-American men die so they could learn more about syphilis. Scientists have, working in Nazi concentration camps, performed brutal experiments on people. Evil is not something, it's not something that just belongs to religion because you were hurt by a religious person. Evil is something that is in all of our hearts because of sin, and God and Jesus Christ are the answer to sin. And so, from our, I'm not going to be able to go back to you because it doesn't seem like you want to have a dialogue right now. You want to be on broadcast and have a monologue. I would hope you call back the show again, and we should dialogue about that, because at the end of the day, God loves you. He wants to be happy. You don't sound happy, Michael, and I hope you will be. And railing against the church isn't the antidote for that. So please call back when you want to have a dialogue, and I'd like talking to you about that.
Thank you, Michael. We move now to Kaiser in Los Angeles, listening. I must be in Louisiana, listening on 690 AM. Kaiser, why are you pro-choice?
I'm pro-choice because just overnight, Charles Manson died, okay? Mm-hmm. His mother was said to be a harlot. Supposing that she went for an abortion, a lot of people would have lived, okay? And a lot of pain wouldn't have happened on this planet. So, and another thing is, why should people fund a society filled with fornicators and adulterers by way of bastardization? You know, if everybody's a bunch of bastards.
I don't understand. Wait, Kaiser, I don't understand the question. Are you saying why should society support children who are born out of wedlock? Is that your question?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay. Well, what I would say, let me address both of those points and see what you think. On the latter point, a child has no control over how they're conceived. Being a child, it's a really rough thing sometimes. You're just so helpless, whether you're unborn or born, whatever your age, especially when you're a small child, you don't control what family you belong to. You're brought into existence by other people. So why would we penalize a child just because his parents, you know, had him out of wedlock? Or we should still help that child. That child didn't choose to be brought into the world in this situation. I agree with you. We should encourage people to have children in marriage. I firmly agree with that. But we shouldn't just abandon children just because they were conceived outside of marriage, or because that child is still a child, a human being, deserves our help. So that's my answer to your second point. Your first point about Charles Manson, well, honestly, ask yourself this. Would his mother even know that that person would grow up to be a killer? I mean, you can't know that. But even still, as a baby, that child, you know, baby Charlie Manson, baby all of us are innocent. We should not be punished in the present for what a future crime might be. We have to be held responsible for what we do. And in fact, your argument can be inverted, though. Because, Kaiser, wouldn't you agree that for a child who's aborted who could grow up to be a Charles Manson, there's another one who could grow up to be a Steve Jobs or an Albert Einstein? Do you see how it cuts both ways?
Right. But you never know. And why would you want to block just in case somebody was killing a killer?
Right. But Kaiser, okay, then would you agree that if you go into a daycare center, one of those children could grow up to be into a serial killer? But I highly doubt you would kill a preschooler because of that reason.
Okay. Catholicism started from Christ, who's a Jew. Jews have something called a bar mitzvah. Bar mitzvah is when your sins, your transgressions are translated to you. You become a son of the commandments. Okay? Prior to that, your sins are upon your parents. Now, if a fetus is killed, that means that the soul of the fetus goes directly into heaven instead of into hell. Okay?
Kaiser, let's bring it back, though. If you kill a two-year-old, will that two-year-old go to heaven?
Right. So why let him be born?
Why not? But here's my question. My question for you is very simple. Is it okay to kill a two-year-old because they might grow up to be a killer?
Get a divorce because the Catholic Church says, well, you won't give me communion. Okay? If you won't give me communion because I'm Catholic, well, why on earth are you funding people that are fornicating?
Wait, Kaiser, did you say the church won't give you communion because you're divorced?
The church won't give people communion if they have have divorced because it's called adultery.
No, Kaiser, the church teaches that if someone is divorced, but they're still validly married to their spouse, and they remarry, and they are engaging in sexual relations with that person, then yes, they're in a state of adultery, because that's what Jesus said. Jesus said clearly in Matthew 19 and in the Gospel of Mark that a person who divorces their spouse and then remarries, they commit adultery. So the church is being faithful to the words of Jesus here. So I guess I'm not quite seeing the connection there. So hopefully you can call back. We can discuss that topic or abortion as well. But I think it's very clear. You should not kill people because of what they might do in the future. You should respect them for what they are in the present. And unborn children are innocent human beings who should be respected under the law and not be killed through abortion.
Couldn't be clearer. Thank you very much for that call, Kaiser. No such thing as Minority Report here. Why are you pro-choice is our question. We'll be right back with more of that right after this.
It might be said that anti-Catholic notions of the church's history are the original fake news. With all the misinformation being spread, where does one look for the truth? In The Real Story of Catholic History, Professor Steve Weidenkopf gives you the facts on over 50 of the most common misconceptions about Catholic history and shows how to answer them simply and powerfully. Whether it's to answer claims about Catholicism's supposedly pagan origins, old myths about the Inquisition that never seem to go away, or more modern errors that anti-Catholics put forth, The Real Story of Catholic History is an essential resource for every Catholic's bookshelf. Order your copy of The Real Story of Catholic History today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did the Catholic Church add books to the Bible? Or did Protestants remove 7 books from the Old Testament? Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger takes you on a fact-filled tour through the history of the Bible, revealing the whole story behind the lost books of the Protestant Old Testament. With the latest information and discourse on crucial issues, Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger is a book that belongs in the library of every serious student of Scripture. And as a special bonus, if you order online, we'll add an ebook copy of 15 Myths, Mistakes, and Misrepresentations about the Deuterocanon to your order absolutely free. Get your free ebook today. Order your copy of Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger by logging on to our online shop at shop.catholic.com. Looking for an on-fire Catholic speaker for your event? Catholic Answers speakers will inform and inspire your audience to grow in their Catholic faith. For more information on booking a Catholic Answers speaker, visit CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com today.
The Wisdom of Mother Angelica.
The only thing new about the heresies in the church and the schisms in the church today is it's mixed with satanic worship. We in the church have gone from enneagrams to centering prayer to solstice worship to goddesses. And you buy it as something new.
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and Trent Horn is our guest this hour. Trent, the author of Persuasive Pro-Life and the brand new book from Ignatius Press, The Case for Catholicism. Even the Mormons are giving it good reviews, as we found out earlier. Why are you pro-choice is our question of the hour. Why are you pro-choice if you are a person who believes that there are circumstances in which it is morally and legally acceptable, or should be, legally acceptable for abortion to take place? This is your hour. Give us a call, 888-318-7884. We go now to Fidel in Wisconsin, listening on 91.7 FM. Fidel, you are on with Trent Horn. Why are you pro-choice?
Hi there. Can you hear me all right?
We can.
All right, good. So I just wanted to share my little viewpoint. I'm not across the board pro-choice. It is circumstantial. The reason that I am pro-choice to a certain extent is because it's connected to how would I put it? I guess I don't see life as being, the sanctity of life is not being just completely across the board. I tend to look at it in terms of quality of life as well. Hmm. So, you know, I think of it in the same category as, you know, assisted suicide, to where under certain circumstances, I do think it's okay for, you know, for life to end. I do think that. Now, of course, abortion is different because the baby has yet to be born, and I do understand that, but, you know, an example of an exception that I would give is, you know, these days with technology and biomedical studies, we can look into genes, and we can look into, you know, just the DNA to see if certain birth defects, if certain, you know, factors will affect the child once it's born. I don't see that as really being, you know, that great for the child. If we can see prior that it might be, you know, have a deformity, have a mental, you know, retardation, I guess we could call it. You know, I don't see that as being that acceptable.
You support, Fidel, you support abortion in case a child is diagnosed with some kind of handicap or a disability of some kind before birth?
Right, which is completely possible now because of, you know, DNA mapping and looking
sure.
at proteins and looking,
what?
You know, I think it is very, very circumstantial, though I will,
well,
you know,
well,
I will
emphasize. Well, Fidel, let me give you a circumstance then. What do you think about trisomy 21, or what's commonly referred to as Down syndrome? Do you think abortion is justified for a child who's diagnosed in the womb with Down syndrome?
I do, because I don't think it's a defect. It's a defect of life, and I don't believe that, you know, a child is or a person is there, you know, grow up to be an adult. I don't see that as being, you know,
Fidel,
the way.
Can I ask you a question? Do you know anyone with Down syndrome?
I do.
Have you ever asked them if they wish they had never been born?
No. No, I have never asked them that, but it's almost like saying you can't, it's hard to gauge because it's going to vary from person to person. It's not an across the board, but the person that I know, their mental state is very much of that of a child almost. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like the question, they couldn't even really grasp the question, to be really honest. So that's where that goes with that. You know?
Okay. Well, I think though, because it's very interesting. I think you and I would agree that if we met someone, and there are obviously different levels of functioning. Most people with Down syndrome, I know, are quite capable of functioning at an adult level and being independent members of society. And if actually you were to ask them if they had, you know, wouldn't it be if you were to say to them, it would have been better if you had never been born. I think they'd be very offended by that. That I find that the people who are more likely to argue that those who are disabled, it would be better for them to have never lived, are actually healthy people. Disabled people, for example, there is a disability rights group that opposes assisted suicide. It is comprised of disabled people, and it is called Not Dead Yet. So I would say that we should look at it. One, we should look at the intrinsic quality of life. And yes, we should always promote people's dignity and their quality of life, but that should never take away their basic dignity or their human rights. Now, let me ask you, though, another question. Suppose you did a diagnosis or something like Down syndrome, and you missed it, the diagnosis was wrong, and the baby is born, and you see they have Down syndrome. You can diagnose it right after birth, you see it. Would you justify infanticide to prevent that child from suffering or from living a life with Down syndrome? What do you think of that case?
I'm sorry, could you let me know that last part again? You said they are born.
They're born. We miss the diagnosis. They have Down syndrome. They're born, and we have a newborn infant we see has Down syndrome. Would you justify infanticide in that case to preserve quality of life?
I think you... I'm sorry. I think you hit it right, the nail right on the head. As far as that, I think that's where the dichotomy begins, doesn't it? In between the it being in the womb versus being out of the womb. I think your question is the golden question, in my opinion. Is you know, and that's
Fidel. But answer. So it seems to me. Correct me if I'm wrong. You would not support infanticide in that case.
I wouldn't. You're right. I would not support that.
Why? No, what is the difference? What is the difference? It's the same child. They're going to have, and your reason for abortion is you don't want them to grow up and have a rough life, right?
Yes.
Okay. Then why? But that's the exact same reason for infanticide. What is the difference? I'm going to ask you what is the difference, but I have a gut feeling what the difference is, and you can feel free to correct me and say that I'm wrong. I think the difference is it makes you sick to think of killing an infant who's writhing around on an operating room table, but you don't get that same feeling when you think about abortion.
That's not completely true. No.
Okay. What is the difference?
And please cut me off whenever I don't want to rant or anything. But you know, along, this is just a small detail, but, as well as the circumstantial abortion that I'm for, it also does involve it being purely, you know, first trimester, because I do believe that once sentience has kind of been, you know, developed in the child, I actually do believe that is a child at that point. Once it is fully formed and it has, you know, the brain and all that stuff, but it's still in the womb, I'm actually not for abortion. I just mean from a very, very early, like, embryo stage, where the DNA, where blood, as soon as blood can be drawn and we can see that something might happen, then as a fertilized egg or you know, then I think that's different. I do think that's different.
Yeah, but it seems to me, I don't understand the difference. So it seems to me you're okay with a first trimester embryo that cannot feel pain, killing them so they don't grow up to live a life with Down syndrome, because we can kill them and they don't feel pain. But if you have a newborn baby, if they are sleeping, we could probably euthanize them painlessly. So I guess for me, why does sentience matter or brain formation? Because a baby's brain continues to form after birth. Your brain continues to form throughout your whole life. A baby does not outperform an animal until, you know, 8 or 9 months after birth. So I think that if you look at it in that way, we're still drawing a kind of arbitrary boundary that sentience and brain formation occurs on a degreed scale, and we're just picking a certain degree rather than any other. So I hope that that's a helpful explanation for you, and do feel free to call back, and we could always discuss this more. But I would say while we should promote quality of life, we should never violate the right to life in our efforts to promote the quality of life.
Thank you very much, Fidel, for that call. Why are you pro-choice is our topic this hour on Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn is our guest. 888-31-TRUTH is our number. We got a lot of calls in the queue, so we'll get to as many of those as we can when we come back right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Join us on air today on Catholic Answers Live.
Christmas is coming, and with Advent just around the bend, we want to make sure you know about our annual Christmas sale. With hundreds of great faith-building resources all on sale at 20% off when you enter promo code WINTER at checkout. With great new resources on Scripture, church history, the saints, Bible prophecy, and so much more. There's simply no better time to stock up on resources to build up your faith and the faith of those around you. Phone 888-291-8000 or go to the shop at Catholic.com right now to take advantage of what is truly the best Catholic sale on the internet, going on now through the end of the year. And remember, enter promo code WINTER at checkout to save 20% on hundreds of great resources throughout the store.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Luke 18:35, when a blind man sitting by the roadside heard that Jesus of Nazareth was passing by, he immediately began to shout, "Jesus, Son of David, have pity on me." When others tried to silence him, he cried out all the louder. He knew that in a matter of moments, and a few steps away, Jesus would have gone, never to return. This was his one chance. Do we ever pray like that? Is it ever that important to us that Jesus hear us? Jesus did indeed hear him and asked what he wanted. "Lord, please, that I may see." Jesus immediately gave him his sight and told him that his faith had saved him, thereby telling him that his confidence in Jesus was the greater gift. How much confidence do we have in him? Do we trust his love for us? Or, blinded by our egos, do we fail to see? I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. What an extraordinary couple hours that we have had. These are always kind of tough ones. Why are you pro-choice? I mean, some of the discussions are very, very friendly and enlightening on everyone's part, and some of them are disturbing, to be honest. And I never quite get over the friendly neighborhood argument that those with disabilities should be done away with. That it strikes me as, wow. And it always feels like a slap every time I hear it. 888-318-7884 is our number. Why are you pro-choice is the question. Trent Horn is our guest, and we go now to Troy in Indianapolis, Indiana, listening on 89.9 there in Indiana. Troy, your question – or no, excuse me, Troy. Why are you pro-choice? Troy, are you there with us? Let's see. Troy?
He was personally –
I'm sorry. Hey, Troy. Somebody made a mistake, and you were not on the air. So let's back up and start again. Why are you pro-choice?
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it was me. It wasn't you.
Go ahead.
Troy, why are you pro-choice?
Yeah, I'm more personally pro-life and politically pro-choice. And I know that's kind of a double-edged sword. But you've already talked about a couple things. My wife and I conceived our first child, everything was healthy, and then as we decided to grow our family, we worked on our second child, and she lost one in between, and we said a prayer, and she became pregnant again, but then they sent us to a doctor because they believed our child had, or the fetus had, it looked like it might be have Down syndrome, and we went through 3D sonograms and trying to find out this information. We still weren't for sure. And I looked at the doctor and I said, well, cause they gave us a choice for a very invasive procedure that was a very risky procedure that could harm the fetus. And I asked what the chances were, and he told us. And of course, it was a sad moment. But I said, so, you know, it doesn't matter because we're still going to carry on and we're going to have our child, you know. And I believe that that's what God gave us, and that's what we believed in.
So Troy, and, you've been blessed with several children. What do you mean when you say you're politically pro-choice? Like, does that mean you want abortion to be legal? And if so, why do you want that?
Well, I believe that pro-choice for the simple discussion of laws.
Okay.
Laws have been established in the land of the United States to try to, you know, for justice. But I firmly believe that I'm not a real, real religious man. I'm a man of faith, but I believe that the laws were that we're only going to face one person to pass judgment on us, and that's God. So everybody makes decisions every day. I try to go to bed knowing that I made the best decisions every day, okay. And then I wake up every morning praying that I make good decisions for God. But
all right.
We seem to be like more worried about the laws, and I'm also a police officer, and I have charged person with battery to an unborn child. So we have laws out there established by states to protect unborn fetuses. However, I do not understand why there's not laws in place to protect those fetuses when it comes to abortion.
And Troy, that's what you're referring to are so-called unborn victim of violence acts or I call them wanted fetus protection laws, that there are laws in about 38 states and at the federal level that if an unborn child is wanted by his mother, that child is considered a person if the mother or the child is harmed in some way, like if they're in an automobile accident, if they're shot. For example, at that shooting recently in Texas, at that Texas church, one of the victims was a pregnant woman, and Texas recognized that that unborn child was a legal victim of that shooting. And to me, it is just a huge inconsistent double standard that when wanted unborn children are killed, they are given protection under the law. We understand it's wrong to harm them. If a man kills a wanted unborn child, most people understand, hey, he needs to be punished for what he's done. But if a woman kills an unwanted unborn child, suddenly our intuitions change. But why should they change? Whether they're wanted or unwanted, the child has the same value. Whether some people want you, that should not change whether you have rights or not. Our rights aren't grounded in wants. They are grounded in our unchanging dignity as a human being, especially as a human being made in the image and likeness of God. And so if you check out our website, Catholic.com, we actually have a lot of good articles on this and other issues related to abortion I think you might find to be helpful. But thank you very much for calling in.
Thank you, Troy. We go now to James in West Lafayette, Indiana, watching on Facebook. Thanks for joining us on Facebook, James. Why are you pro-choice?
I do not think that we should try to make abortion illegal. Because
why is that?
Because people will accuse us of trying to assert our values and turn this country into a theocracy. That's what they always accuse us of trying to do. If we try to exercise political clout in trying to make abortion illegal.
James, do you think abortion should be illegal? We're just not able to do that right now.
In a perfect world, abortion would not be allowed. But of course, we don't live in that perfect world.
Sure, but we can always move towards that and strive for that. What if, though? It sounds interesting to me. People will accuse us of imposing values, of imposing a theocracy. But I guess for me, why should we care if people call us names? I think, and hear me out on this, don't you think we should try to do the right thing even if people don't like that? Now, I agree with you. It's not very practical to try to make abortion illegal if most people want it to be legal because we still live in a democracy. However, wouldn't it make sense that if we educate people and a majority of people want abortion to be illegal, so the majority votes and makes it illegal, there might be a small minority that says this is an unfair theocracy. But if we protect the unborn, what does it matter if that group protests? They're just wrong about this issue. What do you think of that approach?
Yeah, even though that's strictly hypothetical and pretty much unlikely, since we live in a democracy, the majority will not allow that to happen in the first place.
How do you know that? Would you agree, though, there was a time where the majority supported slavery and segregation, and now the majority does not?
Right.
However, couldn't that change for abortion?
It could, but I just don't see it happening. And the same thing with same-sex marriage, which, of course, I don't support. But I think it's an uphill battle to try to make that illegal as well. But actually, that's not the topic.
Right. Right. And I would say actually those are two separate issues. Redefining marriage reinstituting the traditional definition of marriage, I would call it the natural definition of marriage that just makes sense from human reason, that marriage is the union of a man and woman. I agree with you, actually. That's more difficult to put in the law than abortion because more people favor redefining marriage than legal abortion. But I don't think we should be pessimistic about that. Also, we don't necessarily have to confine our efforts to just making abortion illegal. If we educate people, if we work to pray and work for abortion facilities to be closed down, many abortions decrease as a result. So we just shouldn't give up. The struggle for human rights is a long one, and it took a long time. It took centuries to establish human rights, and we're still establishing them for various minority groups, and it may take centuries for the unborn. The march of justice is just kind of a slow crawl towards the truth, and that's something that should not discourage us, but encourage us to keep moving towards the truth and encouraging our children to do the same after we depart from the stage, if you will. But thank you very much for calling.
Thanks, James. We go now to Valerie in Michigan, listening on iHeartRadio. Valerie, why are you pro-choice?
Hello?
Hi, Valerie.
Hi there. I'll have to say I'm not really pro-choice, but I have a dilemma that I've seen it work that I have still yet to resolve in order to, like, just to, you know, I pray outside of abortion clinics. I do all that stuff, but this is what I've seen. And when I worked on a neurosurgery floor, we had girls come in on a regular basis with what are called AVMs or aneurysms. And it was the pregnancy and the increased blood volume that they have during pregnancy that usually caused them to start having the headaches and the warning signs that their AVM or their aneurysm was going to burst.
Right.
And so if the woman continues with the pregnancy without surgery, she'll die. If she has the surgery, I've never seen them come out without having lost it.
Sure.
And I've
how do we resolve this? Is that your question? Like, what do we do?
Yeah.
That's a great question. So you're talking about AVM or arteriovenous malformation. So there's a malformation in blood vessels in the brain. That can lead to aneurysm and bursting, which would, of course, be fatal, or at least would cause very, very severe side effects. So what do we do in this case? Well, the church teaches that there's something called the principle of double effect. And what that principle says is that you can't do something that's intrinsically evil in order to achieve a good. So if the child's aggravated the AVM, you can't kill the child. If her father or mother-in-law or somebody else is aggravating this AVM, you couldn't just kill them, you know, if something's aggravating the condition. But what you can do is directly treat the condition, and you can do a good thing like treat the condition. So you might treat an AVM, let's say, with radiation or more commonly with some kind of a surgery, cranial surgery. And you can do that good thing even if there's a bad result, something that's unintended but bad, like the baby dying. So in this case, you're not intending the baby's death, because if you could do the surgery and the baby lives, everybody would be happy. The baby's death is not intended or the means to save the mother's life. It's just an unintended casualty in something, doing something good to treat this pathology. So what the church teaches is that the principle of double effect would allow a surgical intervention, like a cranial surgery or something, to attack the malformed arteries or veins, but you couldn't just do a direct abortion. You can't just kill one person to save another. So do you see the explanation there?
I do see the difference there. Are you still there, sir?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I have asked so many people this question, and you're the first person that actually gave me a reasonably clear answer.
So many people say that to Trent. I tell you what, I hear that said all the time to Trent. That's the first time I've had a reasonable answer
on
that.
The church actually does address this. At least in the American church, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops has a document called Ethical and Religious Directives for Catholic Healthcare. I believe it's paragraph 47, but if not, it is in there. It says in these kinds of situations, you can validly treat the pathology. You just can't do something like a direct abortion. Treat whatever the problem is, and if the child dies unintentionally, that's tragic, but it is not immoral. So check that out, or go to our website, catholic.com, for more on the subject.
Valerie, thanks very much for that call. Thanks to everybody who gave a call today. Tomorrow's open forum, both hours. So if there's a question that we didn't get to but you'd like to have addressed, you can give us a call again tomorrow at 888-31-TRUTH. 2 hours of open forum means any question you've got on the life, the faith, the history of the Catholic Church is welcome. Trent Horn, author of The Case for Catholicism, thanks so much for two really fine hours.
Thank you, Cy, for two fine hours as well.
And have a happy Thanksgiving.
You too. And happy Thanksgiving to all our listeners.
See you tomorrow, God willing, on Catholic Answers Live.